leads us right into our next topic, which is reincarnation. So, we've said that Kabbalah is a received tradition, tries to explain how the universe works on a spiritual level. We said that the universe is created in order to enable benefit to its creatures as they grow towards God, and our role is to maintain that universe and to grow towards the spiritual and towards God. And we talked a little bit about the appeal that that has for people by investing lives with meaning and with purpose. What I want to do now is talk about reincarnation and what it says about the human soul and why people find it to be so compelling. Now, I want to distinguish between two things. Reincarnation and what's called in Hebrew Triat HaMeitim. Triat HaMeitim is the belief, which Maimonides records as one of the fundamental beliefs of Judaism, and which is referenced in Tanakh, as we'll see in a moment, that at some point in the future, there is an ultimate time in which God will bring back those who passed away, and there will be a day of judgment. If you take a look on your sheet at number 13, this is the most explicit reference to it in Tanakh, from the end of the book of Daniel. At that time, this future time, your nation will escape all who are found inscribed in the book, and many of those who sleep in the dirt will awaken, these for eternal life, and these for eternal shame. Those of insight will shine like the heavens, and those who bring the masses to righteousness will be as stars forever. That's not what we're talking about today. That's Triat HaMeitim, the ultimate resurrection of the dead. It's found in our liturgy, when traditionally one of the blessings of the Amidah is V'ne'amana tala chayot meitim, that God brings the dead to life. That's that's this ultimate resurrection of the dead. I think you can use the word resurrection in Judaism without a TM and without worrying about others who have used it for different purposes. But what we're talking about today is reincarnation, also known as transmigration of souls. Right? Between people or between species. The idea that a human being can pass on and their soul can come back as a turtle or a rock or a bird or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever you like. There was a story, I didn't bring it on the sheet, there was a story out of Muncie, New York about 10, 15 years ago. The fish story?
The talking fish.
Yes. The talking fish, which sparked the song. There was a whole story about how there was a fish market, and there was a non-Jewish worker who was working there, and he starts cutting the fish, and the fish cries out in Hebrew. And he calls the Jew who's working there to talk to the fish, and the fish, according to as the story goes, says it needs a tikkun, it needs to be improved, and it needs to be eaten for Shalashudas on Shabbos, the third meal of Shabbat, it needs to be eaten, and that's its repair. And that was a fascinating story, made it to the New York Times. Anybody know the word in Hebrew for reincarnation? Gilgul, exactly. What does Gilgul mean? Rolling. It means rolling. That's what it means. The term Gilgul, meaning reincarnation, never shows up in Tanakh, never shows up in Talmud. The word Gilgul is used in the Talmud in three different contexts, but none of them have to do with reincarnation. You will never find a reference. Whereas some of the other things that we said from Kabbalah, we did find references to in Talmud, like the Sefer Yetzirah, for example, about creating a human being using Sefer Yetzirah. But that the idea of Gilgul simply isn't present. However, what we do have are verses that may have overtones of reincarnation. And I'm going to bring you a couple of examples of it. Take a look at source number 14. Anyone familiar with the mitzvah of Yibum? Yibum is always translated, I love this translation, as leveret marriage, which means what? It's, you translated one word that people don't know with another word that people don't know. You just use English letters to write it. So what Yibum is, on the simplest level, the protection of a widow within the family. Meaning, if a woman was married and her husband died, and they had not had children, so then it was the responsibility of a male in the family to marry her. Correct. that existed not just as a Jewish idea. That was a general idea in the ancient Near East. In Judaism, it had to be a brother of the deceased specifically who would do the marrying. And the goal is, this way, this woman who, in that world, would have had a very hard time finding a new husband, so now she will be taken care of within the family. Remember that if you go back to biblical times, there's polygamy. And therefore, it's not as though, you know, he has to divorce his current wife in order to marry her. He would just have to support both. In the event that he or she did not want to go ahead with it, they had the option of a ritual called chalitza, and that would break the bond between the two of them. It involves a shoe, it involves spitting, it's its own discussion. But take a look at source number 14. The verse says, "The firstborn child to whom she will give birth will stand on the name of the deceased brother." Literally in the Hebrew, Yakum al Shem Achiv Hamet. "And his name will not be erased from Israel." Well, what does that mean? The firstborn that she's going to give birth to will stand on the name of the deceased brother? Sorry, Joanna.
It will carry the name of the family.
So, on a literal level, it's carrying the name of the family, meaning that he takes over the estate. That her child will take over the property that would have gone to her first husband. That's the simple read. But take a look at source number 15 from the Zohar. We discussed the Zohar 2 weeks ago. The Zohar says the son is the deceased man whose soul has returned to this world. In other words, they're reading Yibum as a reference to reincarnation. That's the idea that's being expressed, and it happens via the brother of the deceased. Another reference, in the end of the Chumash, the end of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses gives blessings to each of the tribes. And his statement to Reuven says, "Yechi Reuven v'al yamot. May Reuven live and not die," as I brought in number 16. Well, what does that mean? Live and not die? Presumably living equals not dying. So why did you need to say live and not die? So there are, again, multiple approaches. The usual approach is to say that either this is simply a very strong blessing, that their tribe should be destined for life, or, alternatively, that it's referring to life in the next world. However, once again, the reincarnation camp says no. It's talking about living and not needing to die and come back. Not needing to be reincarnated. Why wouldn't one want to be reincarnated? We're going to come back to that. A third example, source number 17, is a verse in Job. I'm not bringing you all possible examples, just a few that are clearer than some of the others. The verse there is coming from a speech by somebody named Elihu, who is talking about what God does for human beings and how God communicates with human beings. And he makes the statement that God communicates with human beings by sending them visions in which he will warn them that what they're doing is wrong. And then if they don't listen to the visions, then he'll hit them in order to get them to do what they're supposed to do. That's what Elihu says in this text. And he says, God will perform all of these twice, three times with a man. Man not as opposed to woman, man being human being. That's the statement that's found there. And again, some take that and say it's not talking about sending messages two or three times, but rather it's two or three go-rounds with a human being. They come into this world, they go through life, they die, and then they come back and so forth, rinse and repeat. So that's the sort of read that is taken of various biblical verses in order to suggest that there's something here supporting reincarnation.
But this quote from the Zohar, which is probably the first book, where does he get it from? Where does he get this whole reincarnation concept? It's not a Torah concept. He's validated it through Torah concepts, but it's not really a Torah concept.
So that is the big debate. That is the big debate. Fundamentally, the question is, when the Zohar proposes this, is the Zohar channeling something which is an ancient Jewish idea that simply wasn't revealed in public? Or is this something that gets absorbed from other cultures and their ideas, and it's not one of ours at all? It's a classic debate for which one cannot answer. There is no definitive way to say it is X or it is Y until somebody turns up a 5,000-year-old text of the Zohar instead of the one that we have. So, the one that we have was published in the 13th century. There's no question that it's older than that in terms of its core, but the question is just how old is it? But even with Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai as the author, that means that he would have written it in the first century Common Era, and the question still would be, how old is the idea that he is that he's expressing? Now, one point that is argued in favor of reincarnation is not an argument of text, but an argument of religion. We are all likely familiar with cases in which people suffer terribly in this world and don't appear to deserve it. Or people have great fortune in this world and don't appear to deserve it. We are familiar with cases, God forbid, but it happens, of children who pass away, babies who pass away, not appearing to have done anything wrong, couldn't have done anything wrong. And Judaism is filled with texts that seek to explain this in a variety of ways. One approach that has been taken is to say, reincarnation. The answer is, what you are seeing is only part of the puzzle of this soul's experience in this world. Maybe this person had a previous existence in which they were wonderful, and now they're getting rewarded for it. Maybe they had a previous existence in which they were terrible, and now they're being punished for it. Maybe they came back to this world only to do a particular deed or to have a certain role, and once that was over, that's it. They didn't need to be here anymore. And the idea of it is not, it is, now I can understand what's happening around me. Now I can understand the world that I'm seeing. If you take a look at source number 18, Rabbi Eliezer Papo was a believer in Gilgul, in reincarnation. He said, through belief in reincarnation, one will also know that God's justice is true. God's deeds are perfect. For all of his ways are just. One will not complain about God's actions as some fools do when they suffer. Yeah, that was nice. Why would this appeal to people? Why would people, going back to the resurgence of interest in Kabbalah today, because if you take, I'll give you one example, the Kabbalah Center is very heavily into the idea on their website, and Karen Berg wrote a book about it, that that people do come back, that there is reincarnation. Why would this resonate for people today? Well, it's not. It's not. It's not world to come ideas. It's this world ideas. An opportunity to improve. Sorry, second chances. And Linda. Right. I think both of those. I think it affords the idea of a second chance and hope, as Marlene said. And I think it's also an explanation for the world around us, which is such an inexplicable world when you look around and you see the levels of suffering that exist and that can't be explained. The answer is, I don't need to explain it, because there are things that happen that I'm not aware of, and if I had seen those things, then I would know. So this pair of points, the hope that comes with a second chance, as well as the explanation for why things happen, is a huge attraction for people. Rabbi Sadia Gaon in the 10th century said, you've got to be kidding me. If you take a look at source number 19, he is before the Zohar was published. And he said, in their minds, meaning in the minds of people who believe in reincarnation, this means that Reuven's spirit enters Shimon, and then Levi, and then Yehuda. Some, perhaps most of them, believe that a human soul may enter an animal, or an animal enter a human. The types of foolishness and confusion are legion. He wasn't vague in terms of his feelings about this. He goes on at length to put down the concept. Now, there is one more important concept to discuss as an underpinning for belief in reincarnation. We've talked about biblical verses and mitzvot that you could read in this way. We've talked about philosophy and the idea that this will solve certain problems and make the world a more palatable place. But there's a third element, which is the why not argument. Right? And the why not argument essentially goes like this. God can do anything. Anything includes bringing souls back into this world. Therefore, God can bring souls back into this world. It's within God's power to do so. So why should I assume that you only live once? Maybe you can live more than once. That's the argument. Rambam, Maimonides, made an argument like that, not in this context, but talking about Tchiyat HaMeitim, the ultimate resurrection of the dead. He said someone who doesn't believe that that's possible just doubts divine power. Of course God could do it. What's the problem? You want to ask me, well, how is it going to happen in this way, in that way, whatever? That's God's problem. Rabbi Chazdai Kreshkish, writing in the Middle Ages, was a philosopher who made the same argument regarding extraterrestrial life. The question of, is there life on other planets? His answer was, and he weighed various factors on each side, and then he said, well, why not? Could be. There's nothing to stop it from happening, so why not? To which the response, of course, is, what's the response to why not? Why yes? Why do it? What would be the point of doing it? If you take a look at source number 20, Rabbi Yosef Albo writes regarding this. He says, why should that soul, having served in a body, having experienced freed will, need to return to a body? Why do you need to go around again? That's his question, is why? So you have three bases for this. One, verses that lend themselves potentially to another reading that would support reincarnation. Number two, solving the problems of this, you know, this difficult to understand universe that we live in. And then third, the why not argument. But one more point is very important to understand. We've said that one reason we are here in this world is to perfect ourselves. So the school of reincarnation suggests, and there are multiple schools, but I'm going to focus on one. Well, I'll focus on two. That some people need more than one life. If my mission here is to improve myself and become more spiritual, I may need more than one life in order to do that. And I'm going to mention two schools within this. Take a look at source number 21. Rabbi Papo, who we quoted before in number 18, he says, the purpose of reincarnation is actually to suffer in this world. The negative approach. He says, the suffering of reincarnation is worse than death, and worse than all the punishments of Gehinnom, also known as hell. As the soul is reincarnated through the hierarchy of silent, growing, living, and speaking, what he's referring to is another one of the verses that pro-reincarnation people quote. There's a verse in Genesis in which God says about human beings, they will rule over the Yirdu, Bidgat Hayam uva'of Hashamayim, the fish, and the birds, and the animals, and all that crawls over the land. However, that opening word is the key. The word that I translated as they will rule over, v'yirdu, can also be read as v'yerdu, which means they will descend, they will go down, right? And if you read it that way, then it's they, human beings, will descend into the realms of fish, birds, animals. So that's another one of those verses that gets read to support the idea of reincarnation. But the point here, that's what he's talking about. He says, a person has to suffer by being reincarnated in the realm of the silent. The silent means minerals. You come back as a rock. When the rock dies, or whatever it is that happens, one comes back as growing things, as a plant. And then living things, meaning things that move, animals, birds. And then, ultimately, as those who speak, human beings. That's one school of thought, the negative approach. You're correcting a flaw by having to suffer. The other approach, which is the one that places like the Kabbalah Center like to promote, is that you're coming back to perfect your accomplishments. You know that the Torah has many, many mitzvot, right? We usually give the number of 613 as the number of mitzvot. Why 613? We can talk about another time. But you can't fulfill all of them. Even if you lived in the time of a temple and could bring sacrifices, you still couldn't fulfill all of them. Some of them are only for men. Some of them are only for women. Some of them are only for priests. Some of them are only for non-priests. Some of them are only for the king. You can't be all of them. So what am I supposed to do? I have my checklist. I want to check them all off. Don't worry. Reincarnation. You come back as somebody else. You were a king at some point in a previous life. There are sparks of the soul that separate out and they come back. And that would be the way it works. We're getting towards the end, so I'm not going to take questions right now. But that's an idea expressed by Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the founder of the school of Lurianic Kabbalah, which we've been, you know, which we've been talking about. Take a look at source number 22 from the Zohar. It says, the last body in which the soul was planted and in which it grew successfully and developed good roots will rise up at that time. He's addressing a problem. If you believe in reincarnation, so that means you came back, let's say, five times. You had five different bodies. Then in this ultimate day of judgment, resurrection of the dead that we saw in the book of Daniel, which body comes back? What do you do? So the Zohar's answer is that actually what comes back is the last body in which the soul was planted, because that was where it perfected itself. That's his approach. Feeding into this idea, take a look at number 23 from Rabbi Luria, in which he says the messianic generation, meaning the generation in which Mashiach will come, the Messiah will arrive, will be a reincarnation of the desert generation, the generation of Jews who did not make it into the land of Canaan. You're coming back to fulfill a mission. That's the idea that's expressed there. So, this feeds into the whole resurgence of Kabbalah. So to make sure to sum up what we're saying here on this topic, because I don't want to run into Rabbi Ziering's time, what we've said within our last 20 minutes or so on reincarnation is that the belief in reincarnation is founded on these three ideas. Number one, reading certain verses to support it. Number two, solving the philosophical problem of theodicy, of suffering that doesn't appear to be warranted, or gain that doesn't appear to be warranted. And the third is, well, why not? Why couldn't you be here multiple times? It has a great appeal to people because of the idea of second chances, as well as because of the fact that it can explain what's going on in the world around us. And I think that's heavily into the resurgence and why these books on reincarnation are now so popular. And it preaches the idea that ultimately you get multiple lives, either to be punished for what you did wrong, or perhaps more popularly, to build and do more that will be right. Next week, God willing, we have week number 4, and our topic is red strings and various other apparent superstitions that are supported within Kabbalah. Please stay for Rabbi Ziering's class now on the history of conversion. His question that he's